many years, actually, since around 1988.
Wow. well, before we get into Dulce, I've learned from a Planet X researcher, a friend of mine named John DiNardo, that you're very, very familiar with Serge Manast, who was a Canadian researcher that was exposing NASA's Project Bluebeam technology.
Yes. In fact, I did correspond with him in 1993 and 1994. He was a Canadian journalist who was one of the first. Actually, he was the first one to actually bring about NASA's, the allegation of this Project Blue Beam back in the early 1990s. And so anyway, I found out about it, and I corresponded with him for a while in 1993 or 1994, I don't remember. He indicated to me that that was a secret NASA project for the future. That was in the early 1990s, and some of the applications of Project Bluebeam, I believe, have been transferred to projects like HARP. So, back in 1993 or 1994, when I was corresponding with Serge Manast, I began to study that kind of, feasibility. And the strange thing is that, about 2 years later, Serge Manast had a heart attack in Canada at his residence, and he died of a heart attack at his residence. And it's my understanding that the wife was in the house when he died, and apparently Serge Manast complained of heart trouble. But around the same time, he and his wife apparently saw something bluish outside, like a flash, blue flash, and that was very, very mysterious to me. But anyway, that's the story, my side of the story of Serge Manast.
Yeah, actually, it was on one of Raylan Allen's shows. She said that she also really knew the details about his murder, that a blue beam of light was witnessed at the time he was killed.
That's, I believe so, yes. That I also read a tiny article about it later.
Well, did you get a chance to get in touch with Krista Tilton?
Oh, I sure did. She was very, very, it was very... good to have talked with her. Yes, thank you so much for allowing me to, contact her.
Well, I'm just I'm surprised you were able to get a hold of her. It's really hard to get a hold of her.
Yes, and as I mentioned in my little blurb about the initial rumors about Dulce, New Mexico, and the very significant personalities behind the initial rumors of the Dulce base. In my blurb, I did mention several persons, such as Myrna Hansen, Paul Benowitz, Ann West, Tom Adams,
John Lear,
Jason Bishop, John Lear, and of course Krista Tilton. I had to mention her because she did play a very significant role in the initial Dulce. Rumors. And I talked to her, and she did play a role in that she wrote a very good thing called the Benowitz Papers, which was excellent. And she just like me, doesn't come out dogmatically stating this is it, or something like that, but she just leaves the door open to any interpretation without giving any dogmatic conclusions about Dulce, just like me.
Yeah, that's one reason she sort of decided to go, underground, is because she She really wants to make sure she has concrete evidence that it was the Dulce base, and she's been telling me that it could actually have been a base near Salt Lake City, is what she's telling me.
I see. Well, whatever the case may be, there's no question in my mind, Sheldon, that there is something there in and near Dulce, New Mexico, from so many circumstantial reports that I have collected, and I'm still collecting those reports. I was in that area just about a month ago, and I, you know, explored a little bit of that near the Navajo River near there, and then the next month I'll be going back to Dulce again, this time with a former rancher who knows that area, every square foot of that area, and he and I will go through some interesting terrains, including the backside of Archuleta Mesa, and then all around the Archuleta Mesa, in fact. And then we'll be exploring some areas right near the Colorado state line, right by County Road 357. And that is the area where there are some indescript buildings, houses, that it looks kind of suspicious. But, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that there is something there, and I will definitely continue investigating the Dulce alleged base. And this has nothing to do with whether there are aliens and UFOs in Dulce. That is really a secondary matter to me. The first matter of importance to me is the verification that there are installations there. And according to a report from an alleged Air Force colonel in California who had given this information to a researcher by the name of Anthony Sanchez, this January. According to that colonel's description, there are three installations, separate installations in Dulce. And the main one is, surprisingly, like the rumor says, surprisingly, it is under Archuleta Mesa, the main mesa. And then the second one is located near the eastern slope of Archuleta Mesa and County Road 357, near the Colorado state line. And then, according to this colonel, the third one is the latest one, which was established around 1983 and completed around 1991. And that one is located right next to or right near the ground zero of Project Gas Buggy site.
Right.
Yeah. So these three installations, according to the colonel, are connected by actually tunnels and, subterranean communication system and tunnels. This is the allegation, and I'm going to continue investigation of these claims that there are installations there. And I'm not a kind of a person to dogmatically state anything conclusive, and I have no idea whether there are UFOs or aliens in these installations, but that is just a secondary matter to me. And just like Area 51 in Nevada, my main goal is to make sure that if these projects are going on, the governmental projects in these installations, if there are programs going on, my intention is to make sure that these projects are being conducted appropriate environmental regulations, and that these projects are being done without any infractions of the environmental regulations, and that there are no adverse effects to the environment and the people. But according to my observations for the past 10, 15 years, I believe that there have been some very negative results in the environmental situations in the whole Dulce region, including the town of Dulce itself, the health problems, problems with certain animals, radiation problems still seem to continue on, affecting some people, and so these are the things that I'm very much interested in, just like Area 51. Because of the people's grassroots movement to expose the programs at Area 51, which had been done without any consideration to the environment, because of the grassroots movement of the people, the government has begun to admit their dumping of toxic chemicals in the desert right in Area 51 for many years. And so I am a very firm believer that, people's activism counts very much. And so this is my big project right now, to expose the Dulce situation, if there are such facilities, and that the government admit that they have, conducted things that may have affected the environment.
Well, hey, Norio, you've been into this for well over 20 years now, and there you don't have any pictures. I would suggest you maybe take some pictures on your next trip up there. And I know that there was this picture shown at your conference early last year up there of a supposed vent coming up.
Yes, in fact, yes. This photo was taken by the son of the largest owner of the largest ranches in Dulce, and Mr. Gomez, and he still has that photo. It does definitely look and appear to be rectangular shaped, but it could also be an accident that it looks very natural. it could be a natural sure. opening, but there are many areas which has not been explored in that area because, first of all, even the local people, the Hickory Apache people, are reluctant to delve into this because of their cultural and spiritual beliefs about that region. They have a very fascinating belief that, somehow prevents them from scrutinizing everything about Archuleta Mesa.
Well, I was going to say, do you have a copy of that picture, or can you post it on your Facebook page?
Well, I first of all, this Mr. Gomez is not going to release that picture to the public, except he did it at the conference.
Oh, I see.
He showed that photo to everybody at the conference. But that was at the conference, and unfortunately, there are very, very bad copies of that video footage of the conference.
Well, Anthony Sanchez told me you actually did have a copy of that vent, a picture of that vent.
No, I don't have a copy. Probably that was a misunderstanding.
Oh.
I have seen that copy. I can always see that copy because Mr. Gomez has it, and until he retires, maybe probably in a year and a half from now, as a head of the Department of Agriculture of New Mexico University, he does not want to release everything. So he and I are both, of course, planning to have a big public meeting in Albuquerque, probably a year and a half from now, that will expose the entire Dulce controversy and release everything, pictures and everything, including what looks to be a vent. But as far as vents are concerned, yes, there are many areas near Archuleta Mesa and Archuleta Mountain, and also areas that are even 30 miles from there that could have natural-looking openings, because there are many natural-looking openings in that area. In fact, those natural-looking openings, which have quite often been reported by ranchers in that area, even now, as far away as 100 miles, there are natural openings that people have found, and which just doesn't lead to nowhere. That people, I just talked with a rancher in Angel Fire, New Mexico, who found what looked like a well, but there's nothing, and it just is so deep that they don't know what it is. So it doesn't have to be that if there are installations under Archuleta Mesa in Dulce, New Mexico, the vents don't have to be in that area. It could be any other area. Plus, a lot of things could already have been built underground, from other areas. So people who just get hung up on vents, I don't think that's where it is. The vents could be important, but, modern technology has advanced way to bring these things into the facilities.
I see. This has been one of the biggest fascinations for my life, is the existence of this Dulce base, and I really believe the base is there. But as far as aliens or UFOs being in the base, that also has become a secondary matter to me. For a long time, I also believed that there was like an extraterrestrial genetics laboratory there, but once I got into this Planet X research, I'm actually starting to believe that maybe it's a biological laboratory, and it's eventually going to become like a continuity of government underground shelter. When these Earth changes start, they're going to maybe convert it. That's just my opinion.
Exactly, Sheldon. In fact, I have been a supporter of this theory that if the installations in the Dulce area exist, they have nothing to do with aliens or UFOs, but they would have everything to do with governmental research, for example, biological warfare research facilities. And so that is my take on Dulce.
Well, have you got to see the latest episode that Jesse Ventura did about the Plum Island animal research?
I haven't seen that, but I do believe that, yes, Plum Island is very, very, much into that this whole biological warfare program.
Yeah, they've had some strange creatures wash up on shore on Montauk, Long Island Beach there, and now they're moving the Plum Island lab to Manhattan, Kansas, which is in the middle of our country. I think there's maybe some connection there.
Yeah, very interesting, very interesting. And, I am actually, when you come to think of it, the United States did have a lot of technologies even back in the 1950s with things like, boring machines, that was, 50 years ago. So imagine what technology they have right now, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are underground tunnels beneath the Denver area connecting all the way to NORAD, which is about 100 miles. So if the, Los Alamos National Laboratory in Los Alamos, New Mexico, which is a very large, area of technical areas, to go from one technical area to another technical area, I think about 48 technical areas in Los Alamos alone, to go from one place to another, I would imagine that they already had built tunnels so that the vehicles can go to the other technical areas without, you know, using the surface streets. And so that, we're talking about something that is about maybe, you know, a few miles underground. So if the U.S. government had the technology to create underground tunnels under laboratories or under military bases that stretches, you know, 5 miles, I don't think it's impossible to figure out that maybe they did have technologies to connect even 65 miles or 70 miles, because that's the distance from Los Alamos to Dulce, New Mexico, if you, you know, by straight line, it's about 65 miles. So it's not impossible to imagine that there could be tunnels going from Los Alamos to Dulce, or from Los Alamos to even to the Denver area. So that's about you know, couple hundred miles, or you know, I'm not sure. But you know, to create an underground tunnel stretching 65 miles, it's not impossible to think.
Well, it's kind of weird, but I've interviewed this Dr. Richard Sauder. He's one of the, you know, most public mouthpieces out there on the topic of underground bases and tunnels, and he downplays the Denver airport and the Dulce base. I just find that kind of ironic.
It is very strange that, you know, he talks about some of the most unbelievable, incredible things that are going on in Kirtland Air Force Base and underground, and he says, you know, what he knows about the underground facilities in New Mexico are mind-boggling, but yet he says that the whole Dulce story is unbelievable. And, you know, you're talking about 65 miles underground tunnel, but yet he talks about underground tunnels possibly from Kirtland to even to White Sands, I believe, and other areas, which is a long distance too.
Daryl Sims is another one I'm suspicious of, because he also says they've checked out the Dulce base and there's absolutely nothing there. You know, here's another guy just downplaying it.
No, it's that even the local officials, the police officials, testified at the Dulce conference last year that there is a high possibility that there's something hidden in the Dulce area, you know, underground. So, you know, but the big problem is that we have not come up with irrefutable documentation that there is a facility in Dulce, except just recently Anthony Sanchez produced a DD-21 form of a colonel that is currently in California, who claimed to him that he was part of a military expedition to the Dulce area beginning around 1979, and we have seen his DD-21 form, discharge form, and it states clearly in that discharge form that he was a staff at a place called Rio Arriba CO, comma, DSD-3, which is definitely indication that there is a military installation in Rio Arriba County, which is in Dulce, New Mexico. So, well, whether this discharge form is authentic or not, I'm not sure, but it doesn't say any place in the discharge paper naming Dulce, but this abbreviation DSD-3 is very interesting, and then also Rio Arriba County. Very fascinating. So, you know, this is just maybe one piece of the puzzle, but I have no doubt that that is a very convenient location, because it is part of the Native American land, Jicarilla Apache Nation. And Dulce is right in the middle of that, and the United States have had a history of using Native American land to conduct a lot of experiments, and one good example took place in California near Palm Springs in a place called Cabazon Indian Reservation. And during the early 1980s, there was a scandal that became well known and was taken up by the mainstream news media that the United States government had been conducting some, biological warfare experiments and experiments with fuel air explosives using the Cabazon Indian Reservation. And Cabazon Indian Reservation, money was exchanged, and there was a big scandal about it, and the Cabazon Indian Reservation wanted to, in exchange, get this American company's software called Promise Software that was very effective in, it's called a prosecution software, and the United States government tried to, get involved in, stealing and buying, or stealing and converting this software from a private company.
I heard Nancy Leader was involved in that. Her name used to be Nancy Hamilton.
Yes. It was called, this actual software was produced by the Mr. Hamilton, which is, he has no connection to Bill Hamilton, a UFO researcher, but it's a different, completely different person. But anyway, this shows that the United States government does have interest in using Native American land to conduct anything, because, these are lands where you don't know what authority precedes, which authority, when doing something on these reservations. So my thinking is that, yes, the Hickory Apache Reservation in Dulce is a very, very expansive area, a very, very, very large area, and right at the boundary line of the Hickory Apache Reservation land, that's where the United States exploded an atomic device deep underground, about to actually 2 miles underground, in 1967, and most people have never heard of it, but the government exploded this atomic device in order to facilitate the flow of natural gas.
Norio?
In that area.
Can I interject here?
Yes.
I got to thinking about these atomic tests that they were doing for a long time above ground in Nevada, and then all of a sudden they started doing them underground, and I got to thinking, I bet you that's just a cover story. What they're actually doing is hollowing out these facilities under the earth with exploding atomic weapons or whatever.
Yes, that's a very good, interesting take on this. Yes, a lot of people have suspected that maybe that by exploding an atomic device, maybe they have created some, like cavities. Caverns. Because this happened only about 22 miles southwest of Dulce, and it happened in 1967, and it was called the Project Gas Buggy, part of the Plowshare programs, which was conducted by the Atomic Energy Commission, using the atomic power for peaceful purposes after World War II. So in 1967 was the second one that the U.S. did, and the first one was near Carlsbad Caverns. I think that was in 1950, I believe. But the second one was 1967, right near Dulce, New Mexico. So I have actually visited the Ground Zero area, and there are still some warning signs about radiation in that area. The United States government actually told the people that the purpose was to ease the flow of natural gas so that people in that area can benefit from the gas, because natural gas was trapped in the rocks and so on underground, and so that was the outward explanation. But the real reason, as you said, could be, be different. But anyway, the United States began to get worried about this failed, well, they said it wasn't too successful. So the United States began to realize that there has been radiation problems leaking out. And so from 1975, they began to monitor the radiation levels in that area, including some animals. And
hey, Norio?
Yes.
Can I interject here? This may be a possible dot connector in your research. There's a talk show host out there by the name of John Moore, and he says that I can't remember the town, but it's somewhere in southeast Missouri. He has stated that there was actually a underground command and control bunker being built, but they were using the cover story that it was actually a Superfund cleanup site to clean up toxic toxic nuclear waste. But he's a homicide investigator, so this guy knows how to look for evidence, and he found out that that was actually a cover story, that it was a Superfund cleanup site, when in reality they were building an underground command and control bunker there in Missouri.
Yeah, I think this kind of thing is very very interesting, and you know, there could be some truth to it. And you know, one of the things I'm very much interested in, and this was confirmed by ranchers in Dulce, especially the Gomez family, who said that they believe that the government may have been monitoring certain cows in that area since around 1975. Periodically monitoring the radiation levels. And so who knows? Perhaps this kind of activity may have been covered by creating or staging the so-called cattle mutilations, which started around that time, around 1975, in that whole area. So this is a very interesting possibility. And the other thing that I want to say is that, the town of Dulce, New Mexico, has experienced problems with, especially among some women, problems with fertility. And this has been going on. You know, the town of Dulce had used to have about 4,600 people. Now it's only 2,600. And there are two medical emergency facilities in that area, in Dulce, very, very modern looking. But the problem with Dulce includes health problems. And as I mentioned, the fertility problems among some women in there is very noticeable. And so this, together with some allegations that the government had dumped some toxic chemicals in that area, in nearby mesas and other areas of Dulce, is very possible. It's very possible. And, first of all, Los Alamos National Laboratory, right around 1945, had a plan to dump some nuclear waste materials near Dulce, New Mexico, back in 1945, in 1946, and they were planning to use the old existing mining tunnels in the Alcholata Mesa area to possibly dump the nuclear waste. So whether or not they started doing that initially for 1 or 2 years in 1945, I'm not sure. But all this seems to tie in with the speculation that, yes, this whole Dulce situation may be tied in with cover-up of, this kind of activity. In other words, dumping of toxic materials and nuclear waste into these areas and using that Native American land in exchange for some kind of compensation. It's very very interesting speculation. If you look at the town of Dulce now, for being a town of only 2,600, there are many modern buildings, school buildings, middle school, brand new buildings, brand new high school building, brand new medical emergencies buildings.
Did you get to share all that with Krista?
I did a little bit, yes.
Okay, good.
And for a town of that size, I'm surprised. But, you know, when you go to these buildings, when you visit these schools, you don't see hardly any significant number of students. Very, very little, small. Even during a weekday. I was just there last year and went on a Wednesday to visit the elementary school, but you could count the number of students there. There's hardly any students I saw at the Dulce High School, yet they have brand new huge buildings. So, you know, where are the money coming from to create, build all these interesting-looking modern infrastructure in the town of Dulce, you know?
You just gave me a thought here, Norio. I remember that interview you did, or no, this was a show that Anthony Hilder did at the time. He was interviewing some guy named Pastor or Reverend Dietz. I'd have to go listen to it again, but they were this pastor or reverend says they were actually shipping children in buses out there to one of the underground facilities in Area 51, and I got to thinking, you're mentioning these big buildings now they have in Dulce, maybe that's like a transfer point or something to get them underground. They haul in buses of children or something there.
Well, this is, you know, it sounds almost like sci-fi, but you know, if you look at the town of Dulce, you begin to wonder where did all this money come from, and it's not because of the casino in Dulce. There's just a very small casino inside a Best Western hotel in Dulce, but that's not where the money is coming from. Of course, money could be coming from the revenues from the natural gas in that area, the oil and so on. But, you know, there's other possibilities. But as you mentioned one interesting thing, is that in 1993, when I made this two-hour presentation about the secrets of Dreamland, about Area 51, I mentioned about New Mexico also, and I mentioned the fact that the Albuquerque Journal in 1992 had an article about New Mexico, why New Mexico has the most number of missing children per population in the United States. It was a fascinating article, and I mentioned that in my two-hour presentation in 1994, Secrets of Dreamland, and, you know, it is a fact that at least at that time, around 1991, 1992, that New Mexico did experience a high number of missing children, and it's the most number of missing children per population in any state in the United States.
Now, it's interesting you bring that up, because I highly suspect that where all these missing children have been going over the years, they're actually going into these underground bases. They may even be taking them to off-world bases. Remember that British TV documentary, Alternative 3, that came out in the late 70s?
Yes.
They were selecting, like, prominent figures, and then all of a sudden they just disappear off the face of the earth. There may actually really be underground cities where, you know, they're raising these kids to become slaves or for some bigger plan in the future when Planet X passes. Maybe they're going to be like clone soldiers to, you know, come up and enforce the law for the elites while they're underground or something.
Yeah, it's all of these are very fascinating speculations, but I believe that all of these topics that we have discussed are very, could be realistic, you know, speculation. So I have no, I just don't believe personally that all of this thing have anything to do with UFOs or aliens, and you know, I think that the UFOs and alien concept are could be designed by the government to bring the laughter curtain or to, you know, bring this ridiculousness to this scrutiny of underground bases and so on.
Well, you remember that one picture Paul Benowitz got? It shows like a sort of like a holographic image of a UFO going into the site of Archuleta Mesa. I really believe that was actually a hologram that they did on him just to make him think that there were UFOs in there.
Yeah, well, in fact, yes, I know, Highway Patrol officer Gabe Valdez, who lives in Albuquerque now, he told me recently, a couple of months ago, that he is convinced that the United States and Kirtland Air Force Base and the other parts of the military did actually conduct several incidents in the Archuleta Mesa area and staged what appeared to be UFO incidents to people. For example, back in 1982 and so on, when Paul Bennett was visiting that area, the Gabe Valdez said that he did see military personnel with what appeared to be like a giant, those searchlights, but actually they were projecting some images. And he's convinced, Gabe Valdez is convinced, just like me, that the government did stage some UFO-looking incidents in that area. They made some props. They brought some props on the mesa that looked to be like, vents or other artifacts on Archuleta Mesa, and even conducted drilling exercises, bringing in the military from the Fort Carson, Colorado, to conduct some exercises. This all seemed to have resulted from the part of the rumors about Dulce that there was something alien going on.
But so, something here, because I do find Paul Benowitz to have been a very, very highly credible figure, but what I think was happening was the Air Force intelligence was playing tricks on him, so he would, otherwise he might not really have figured out what was going on there.
Yeah, see, but, yes, as you said, I think Paul Bennett knew what was going on, maybe he might even have come to a conclusion that there is a some kind of a biological research laboratory in there, and maybe he even pretended that he was being brainwashed, and he conducted his own independent investigations nevertheless. But later on, he became paranoid, and that was unfortunate. But I believe that Paul Benowitz knew more than he allowed people to find out. And so the Air Force and Kirtland Air Force Base and people like Richard Doty and William Moore, who claim to have participated in the disinformation, ploy with Paul Benowitz, I think they were in turn probably counter, I would say, they were maybe even victims of counterintelligence. In other words, Paul Benowitz may have known the real reason for Dulce, but he pretended that he was being brainwashed by Richard Doty and others, OSI at Kirtland, and
maybe he did that in order to protect his own life, right?
That's very possible. That is very possible. So, like I said, this whole Dulce situation has a very fascinating story. And as far as technologies were concerned, back in 1979 and 1980, I have no doubt that Sandia Laboratories inside Kirtland were conducting lots of experiments, like prototypes of remotely controlled platforms or unmanned aerial vehicles already in 1979, and maybe they even have tested some of these, in many places.
Well, back to the holographic imagery thing. I don't know if you're aware of this, Norio, but me and John Lear, we're two people out there that believe there were absolutely no airplanes on 9/11. We think that those were holographic imagery projections of Boeing airliners going into the World Trade Center towers. And, you know, there's witnesses that didn't even hear a plane hit the building when that happened. So I really believe that there weren't any airplanes on 9/11.
Yes, that's what some researchers say. And, you know, these are the kinds of speculations that are not ridiculous at all, you know, because considering the fact that the technology has developed so much in the past, 30 years, even the past 40 years, let's say that a lot of people thought that the holographic projection devices were just things of the recent things, but actually they may have, had prototypes of all these things back in the 30 years ago. And
well, back in the late 90s, the Air Force actually admitted that on their website that they did indeed have holographic imagery projection capability. They admitted this back in the late 90s.
Yes, in the late 90s, they came up with this 2025 report of the Air Force, and it's definitely part of that program. But when they said that this is going to be a future program, this means that they already had it. Anytime the government or the Air Force announces that they're going to do this in 15 more years, that means they already did it. Just like stealth program. When they came up with the story that they have now built a stealth, F-117, that means they were already testing it for more than 15 years already before they announced it. So all of this is really, Sheldon, is very fascinating, and I think just the UFO concept and alien concept could be just a smokescreen for what may be happening realistically behind these facade of people's beliefs in UFOs and alien stories.
Yeah, let's steer the topic now a little bit. I was very heavily into this UFO phenomena for like 17 or 18 years, and I finally came to the conclusion that I think this is actually a psyops, and most of it is a scam. And a lot of people, they go along with what Bill Cooper said back from 1993, that, he was showing all this information that, yeah, there's UFO bases and all that. But I don't think most people were listening to Bill Cooper the final 6 or 7 years he was on the radio, because he was repeatedly saying on his shows that he really suspected he was a victim of disinformation from the Office of Naval Intelligence, and he also thought that it was a big scam himself.
Exactly, and this is one aspect of Bill Cooper that I really admired, especially towards the latter part of his research. He actually started saying that this whole UFO thing was a big scam, and he admitted that he was probably disinformed, and he began to call ufology a ufology, U-F-O-O-L-O-G-Y, ufology, and I highly respected him. Of course, after he began to actually proclaim that this whole UFO thing was a big, hoax or possible scam, he in turn went to another direction, and which is the militia movement, and he moved to Eager, Arizona, and unfortunately, he was a victim of his paranoia in this militia movement, and he unfortunately miscalculated a lot of things about the militia movement, and he started shooting an officer, and an officer in turn shot him back, and that was a very unfortunate thing that he experienced. But
I actually went to his funeral.
Oh yes.
Uh-huh.
In fact, yes, I went there too, and
Yes. You were there?
In fact, yes. In fact, I was in Eager, Arizona, and I attended. In fact, Anthony Hilder was there.
Yeah, that's where I actually met Anthony for the first time in person.
I see. In fact, in the church, I gave a little bit of a short, eulogy statement saying that how I admired Bill Cooper from a viewpoint that he began to associate UFOs concept with the New World Order concept, and he began to politicize the UFO movement and began to associate it. In fact, that was in 1989.
You know what, Norio, my memory's getting really bad because I actually recorded you talking at that church. I have it on a audio cassette tape, and I don't even remember you being there.
I see. Yeah, I was there, and remember, if you were there at the church, Bill Cooper's funeral, outside the church, there were several police cars or some government vehicles there.
Yeah, Bill's son Doyle said there were actually people taking license plates there.
Yes, that's right. And but this whole thing about Bill Cooper is that when Bill Cooper first came to the scene in 1988, and then started his lectures around 1989, he created this hypothesis called the secret government, which was very, very interesting. But later on, he incorporated that his hypothesis, which was about a 20-page hypothesis about the secret government, he incorporated that later in his book, Behold the Pale Horse. But by the time Behold the Pale Horse was published, he was already beginning to depart from ufology. And, when that book came in the mid 1990s, about 1995 or 1996, I forgot, he was already beginning to depart from UFO research. But it was too late because his book already came out. So anyway,
that's probably why a lot of people connect him with UFOs and aliens, because they weren't really listening to his shows the last few years he was alive.
Exactly, Sheldon, you're right to the point.
Yep,
yes,
yep.
No question about it. And there are very few researchers that even tell about this this thing. And so Bill Cooper had been associated even now with UFOs, and because he discarded all this UFO talks in the last year of his life. And especially, and he said it's just lunacy. And
actually, I have one of his shows from 1994. It's called UFO Series 1, 2, 3, and 4, where he's exposing people like Stanton Friedman, Bud Hopkins, Linda Howe, and Whitley Strieber, and Don Ecker, Vicki Ecker. He actually was starting to expose this movement in 94.
Yes, I think so, too. And, this whole UFO movement, basically, in one short sentence, I think it's one of the industry that benefits from people's indiscriminate belief in UFOs as alien spacecraft. And it's a big industry, and there are people who make a living out of, propagating this UFOs as alien spacecraft type of thinking. And this is the reason why I am completely leery of groups like MUFON and all other organizations who indiscriminately accept everything about UFOs I think it's almost like brainwashing.
In the fact that they allow all these UFO researchers on big mainstream shows like Coast to Coast, if the government really didn't want that information getting out, they wouldn't allow it on a big mainstream radio show.
Exactly. That's right. And so this is the reason why, Sheldon, I think that the beliefs in UFOs are a very convenient tool for the government. Let's say the government will benefit, and there's no question about it, from a segment of the population's belief in UFOs as alien visitations. I think they are even promoting this concept gradually.
I think the reason they're promoting this is because there's some type of major psyops that's going to be deployed upon the public soon. I heard you on Ronnie McMullen's show that, and Ronnie was mentioning that there's some type of big staged event that they're going to do at the Olympics in August of 2012 in the UK. Have you heard that?
I have not heard that, but I think this is a very interesting concept. You know, with more hype on 2012, I think that may be a convenient opportunity to experiment on a large-scale PSYOP programs using the manipulating the people's beliefs in this type of thing. What a convenient opportunity that will be for government to, or you know, secret elitists to conduct a large-scale PSYOPs program. And so, you know, anything is possible. And I think, you know, as we come into next year, I think there will be more hype about 2012. And, you know, when the lot of the world's people begin to talk about 2012 as we approach the year, I think it will create an environment which is could be suitable for large-scale global experiments in PSYOPs.
Now, on a separate note here, I'm into the Planet X thing. What are your thoughts on Planet X?
Well, I am not, to tell you the truth, I am not familiar with this subject like you. And so, you know, I don't know how, what to say, because I don't want to say things that I really don't know.
Sure.
But as I said, you know, it could be... you know, but when things happen, when catastrophic incidents happen on Earth, yes, I think that's when a lot of pre-planned programs can be instituted to either to create a conduit for an escape, or to create a conduit to pacify the people, or for any purpose. I think psychological operations in a large global scale could be one way to, you know, to do something about it.
Well, this is my current thought scenario about the 2012 topic. I believe that the elites have known about this Planet X object, which is actually a T or L class series brown dwarf star. They've been tracking it since at least 1979, and they've been building these underground shelters since, you know, possibly the end of World War II, to prepare for Planet X coming this way, because they don't know exactly when it's going to get here. And I think they're going to launch this. That's why they've had to condition the population with all this UFO stuff, because when Planet X finally gets close enough to us, people are going to have a sense of hope and comfort and reassurance that everything's going to be okay, so they'll say... They'll finally come out and launch a major UFO deception and say, these people are here to save us from Planet X. They're going to restore the climate change that the planet's been undergoing, and everything's going to be okay, and that'll give the elites a chance to get underground while this massive UFO deception is going on. That's my thoughts on it.
You know, that's a very good, you know, I think, line of thought, and this kind of thought is more realistic to me than any other kind of, you know, alien UFO type of you know, scenario. And I think a scenario is what's more important, and this kind of a UFO alien scenario could be promulgated, or possibly be staged, or be created for this kind of you know, situations. And that is my basic belief, and I have not changed from my take on this for many, many years. In fact, in the late 1970s, I began to completely abandon the actual ET hypothesis of the origins of UFO phenomena, and I have never digressed from it. And even in the early 1990s, when I started investigating Area 51, my main theme, Sheldon, was that the government has enough technology to even simulate certain things.
Well, look, when they murdered Phil Schneider, when they murdered him, he was telling the public that as every calendar year goes by, the military technology advances 44.5 years.
Yeah, I think that's very, very probable. You know, so, you know, but anyway, yes, Sheldon, I think I've basically stated my position on most of these things, and, you know, it's really, I'm so glad we talked today, and, you know, and you have always thought that, you know, I don't know if you have thought this or not, but I'm a kind of a person that wants to have an open, you know, broad-minded perspective of things, and yeah, I'm not a person who says that this is that or this is this, you know, but I think I can't help but bring this concept that this whole UFO phenomenon, the UFO phenomenon itself, we still don't know, but the whole belief in UFOs as alien spacecraft is really a big deception. And I still can say that this is a big deception, and so many persons are just absolutely taken in by the so-called American ufology movement. And you know, many people may get mad at me for saying this, but this whole ufology movement, or the propagation of UFOs as alien spacecraft, this movement is really, I think, a big, grand deception.
Me too, Norio. Yep. And I have a researcher friend here in Tucson. His name is Ralph Epperson. And I don't know, you ever heard of him?
Yes. In fact, I did communicate one time briefly with him. And yes.
Well,
give him my best regards.
Okay, and, yeah.
And anyway, Sheldon, I'm going to have to leave now, unfortunately.
I just want to wrap it up by saying that Ralph Epperson told me, why do UFOs need lights on them to fly around in the skies? And I thought that was a great point.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Sheldon, it has been such a great pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, it's really been a pleasure. We'll do it again sometime, Norio.
We'll definitely do.
All right, you have a good day. Thanks for coming
on
board.
Thank you very much.
Yep, bye-bye. Okay, folks, that was Norio Hayakawa, who resides in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was a wonderful interaction with him today, discussing this UFO deception and the facts pertaining to what he knows on the underground base outside Dulce, New Mexico. Well, that's the end of the pre-recorded interview with Norio. I hope you've enjoyed it. That's the end of this recording. Thanks.
At his residence.